And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to our year-end episode of Awesome Mania. It is like a week away from the end of the year. And it's, as always, it's me, Mike, along with your undisputed champion, Mr. Ben Taylor.
Hashtag it me.
It me. So, Ben, we have... We're probably going to keep this episode short, even though it's the year end.
Yeah.
But we do have a few news and notes that we want to discuss. You have some topics that you want to discuss, plus a little bit of chatter about TLC.
Yeah, I mean...
We have a few things to talk about.
Yeah. There's definitely some conversations to be had.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and so that's a good start to go right into news and notes as we have Marty Scurll, who is literally the hottest free agent in professional wrestling right now, is apparently still
depends
doing
on your definition of free agent, really.
Yeah,
because CM Punk still ain't signed with a fucking wrestling company.
But Marty has shown up in NWA.
Yep.
He's apparently still doing stuff for Ring of Honor, even though he's not.
I think, verbally agreed to like two dates for them, I think.
And there's a third company not to be named at this time that he is also going to be appearing with. So
I have a prediction who that is, but.
Who are you thinking?
I think it's going to be Progress.
That would be a good pick.
Because next week, Progress, every Christmas, their December show, Progress do a show called Unboxing Live, right? Where they don't announce the card and just a bunch of crazy shit happens. So I wouldn't be surprised if Marty shows up there.
That'd actually be really cool.
So...
But yeah, so that's what's going on with Marty. Obviously, big thing is that he also wants a NWA Heavyweight Championship match against Nick Aldis.
Yep.
And on Being the Elite, they are constantly alluding to Marty coming to AEW eventually. And Cody, actually, I just read this morning, Cody actually did an interview where he says that what he's doing right now isn't going to be permanent.
Yeah, it's kind of he's kind of testing the waters.
Yeah, which is fine. It's good to do that.
There seems to be a weird thing going on with NWA and AEW because the most recent AEW Dark, Colt Cabana was on commentary, and he's the NWA like secondary champion.
Yeah, and not only that, but also like the build up to going in the full gear, they're using the Rock and Roll Express.
Yep.
And they're the current tag team champions of NWA.
Yeah. But then again, we say that, but on Being the Elite last night, the Young Bucks made a joke about we can't show Kenny Omega's shorts because it's got the words New Japan on it and everyone will think we're working together. So we can see conspiracy theories all we like. It just, we don't know how contracts are working out and things like that. But, like, and I'm not going to lie to you, as someone that's a massive Marty Scurll fan, kinda glad that she's not that he's not in ROH anymore, because that place has felt like it's dying for a while.
Yeah, I remember you brought it up how it's been more like a clip show than actual.
It's felt that way, yeah.
Yeah. So and you've had the stuff in the past that we talked about, like with Joey Mercury and you know, several other Kelly Klein. So there's definitely issues going on there.
The Kelly Klein thing, Joey Mercury, also just like a lot of their top talent getting hurt. Like Taven just had to have ankle surgery and bunch of other stuff. So
yeah,
and don't get me wrong, what matches from ROH I do watch. I enjoy, depending on who's in them.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of talent in ROH, it just makes me go, huh? Anyway.
Yeah. Next up, we got WWE releases. WWE did the unpredictable and actually did grant some releases.
Yeah.
Two to those that actually requested it, in Sin Cara and Luke Harper. And another two that was not actually requested but kind of threw them off guard was The Ascension. It is already known that Sin Cara has changed his name in honor of the person who actually trained him, which I can't remember the name off the top of my head. And Luke Harper is going to be going back to his Brody Lee indie name.
And as I said when this was announced, nothing of value was lost.
I agree with Sin Cara, but I disagree with the other two. But at the same time, I also see your argument because all four of them were not being used on television.
Exactly. And so that's not a shot at the four talents.
Yeah.
It is just saying they weren't being used on TV. They've not been used. Three of the four haven't been used on TV in months.
Yeah.
When they are used on TV, they're used as jobbers. So nothing of consequence was lost for the WWE. For the talents themselves, it's a good thing that they can maybe expand, move on, try and get themselves work elsewhere.
And not only that, but also one thing is that as we found out, that if Luke Harper had been let go at the time his contract expired, he would have actually, by having this release, he actually got 2 weeks early to get out of his contract, essentially. And Sin Cara had also just signed a 3-year deal, so he had 3 years left on his contract.
Yeah.
I don't know what the contract status of the Ascension was.
Yeah. The other thing to talk about here is, since we brought up releases and bookings and things like that, the rumors that the WWE are looking to turn the Revival into a comedy tag team for the remainder of their run with the company, so that when they leave, people don't value them as much.
Yeah.
Is circling. So.
Yeah, that really sucks. And then not only that, but since we're also on the topic of contracts, the New Day have all signed 5-year contracts, which Kofi Kingston has kind of confirmed that this will probably be his last. And Dana Brooke has signed a 5-year deal.
Yep.
And this is one that somebody actually, our good friend Matt, wanted us to talk about a little bit more in depth. What are your thoughts on the whole Dana Brooke contract extension?
Well, it makes sense for the New Day. I mean, the WWE practically fund up, down, down. So that's kind of Xavier Woods in their pocket for a while. Big E is a future world champion. Kofi, he's Kofi. He's amazing, right? Like, what is there to say? And the WWE would be stupid to let one of their most popular factions go. As for Dana, good for Dana, I guess. I don't think her signing a 5-year deal is particularly earth-shattering. Like, it's not like, oh, the WWE have locked up Charlotte for 5 years, meaning she can never show up in AEW, especially given the rumors about what's happening with Rick. But don't get me wrong, it's good for Dana. It's good for the WWE to have a talent like Dana on hand. It's just, I don't think it's a monumental, ground-cracking thing.
I think it's a good, like you say, a good signing for Dana. But not only that, but I think, honestly, this is WWE's way of saying it's like, hey, we know we've kind of dropped the ball with you, even though you've been working extremely hard and you're getting the crowd behind you.
Yeah.
This is also kind of a little bit reward from WWE. You also don't know what maybe booking stuff is going on. And not only that, but through WWE, Dana has been able, and I read this recently, it's helped her fund her clothing line, her perfume line, you know, and other things that she does outside of WWE. And
quite frankly, like, she made a statement about when her boyfriend died and how it like kind of sent her into a mental spin and how the WWE kept her going and everything like that. So makes sense for her to sign. It makes sense for them to sign her. Blah 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 blah. So
it was overall, it's a contract that made sense at the end of the day. Next up we have the Young Bucks. And this is kind of going into your topics too, Ben, because you want to talk about AEW in general, including the VPs. So the Young Bucks have quit Twitter. And it's been, I'm going to say it's been controversial. Simply now,
bear in mind, this is the second time we tried to tape this episode. Right? Little peek behind the scenes here. This is the second time we tried taping this episode. And the first time we tried taping this episode, none of the shit we'd heard we were about to talk about had happened.
Yeah.
And that was 2 days ago.
Yeah, literally 2 days ago. But actually certain things were breaking while we were on the ship, while we were recording. Yeah. So, but yeah, there's been a lot more information coming out in those 2 days. But initially when we first started talking about this, the Young Bucks had quit Twitter. Essentially, they're getting away from the toxicity of the fans, to which then Matt and Nick's father tweets out saying that they're taking a much needed break from social media and blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And then I think one of them and finally
then he
goes out.
No, then Daddy Buck, Papa Buck, however the internet refers to him, goes on and replies to like six or seven people that are like, how do major figures who gained their notoriety and where they are now via the internet and internet fandom quit fucking Twitter? And basically Papa Buck goes through and calls a bunch of them like toxic and you're being mean and how does it feel to be such a mean person. And
that's how the Bucks also gain notoriety, by throwing shade.
Right.
You know?
And then yesterday, I think it was, that Matt put out a statement. I think it was Matt. It was either Matt or Nick.
I think it was Matt, and it was a statement stating that they needed to get off of social media so that way they can focus more on their duties. And
how about you stop making shitty being the elite? How about you stop making that and focus on your VP duties?
Yeah, because...
All right, so here goes with the AEW hate. I'm fully prepared for people to get pissed at this or whatever, but I don't give a fuck. One of the big problems with AEW is they're not showing shit on TV. 90% of their storylines are being done on Being the Elite, which isn't even on the main AEW YouTube channel. And the other half are being done on Row 2 dot dot dot, which isn't even on the AEW main YouTube channel. So in order to get the storyline for some, like, in order to get the storyline for the conclusion of Dynamite this last week, right?
Yeah.
You had to go to YouTube to a channel that isn't even AEW's main YouTube channel. If you're taking that stuff and put it on telly, maybe the product wouldn't be getting the notice it's getting. So, long story short, for those of you who haven't been following, they tried to do a big thing with the Dark Order and the Best Friends, and then they realized that at least one half of the Dark Order was really bad, and the crowd weren't reacting to them the way they wanted to. So they took the Dark Order off TV for a while, and they brought them back with the whole hashtag join Dark Order thing, which has been very briefly referred to on TV with a couple of segments. Whereas on Being the Elite, you're actually seeing jobbers and wrestlers consider joining the Dark Order. Right?
Yeah.
That shit should be on TV. Right?
Yeah. Because that's where everyone's going to be watching.
The whole Hangman Page story that you're seeing, like, you're seeing every now and again that his caption says something funny, right? You're not seeing the fact that backstage he's basically turned into an alcoholic, as the storyline is on Being the Elite. You're not seeing the fact that Michael Nakazawa is begging for TV time, right? Like,
well, and not only that, but also to piggyback off of that, you know, stuff that is shown on TV is something that Chris Jericho actually called a full team meeting for in the locker room, which was about tag team wrestling.
Yeah.
Because he pretty much said it, you're burying the referees when you're not following the rules of tag team wrestling. And he openly called out the Lucha Brothers.
Because they just don't tag.
And then we
now,
look.
Now,
and then we,
now, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
If we were in Mexico and we were in Lucha rules, the rules are if one of the members of your team leaves the ring, you don't have to tag. Spoiler alert, AEW is not Lucha rules.
Yep. Yep. But the thing that drove me nuts is that I'm watching the latest Dynamite. Mm-hmm. And there's like, what, three tag team matches?
Yep.
And the first one is Lucha Bros. And they're like never tagging in and out of the match. And it's like Jericho just ripped you guys a new asshole about this. Yeah. And you're still ignoring it. Yeah. But then you look at the next match, which was also a tag team match, which was Cody and Darby versus Butcher and the Blade, which we'll get more in deep about Butcher and Blade because I know you want to talk about them. But that was actually a good tag team match because they're actually following tag team rules.
Tag team psychology.
Yeah. So it's like when you, it's like, so they got it, but Lucha Bros didn't give a shit in theirs. You know, and that's what's really disappointing about that.
You know, I don't know whether it's disappointing or predictable. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing about Pentagon and Phoenix is they don't do that shit. They flip and they do stupid stunts and all kinds of stuff. Like, I still don't, like, take for example, right, there are some vagaries in tag team wrestling, right? You're not apparently you have to tag with the hand, right? Then how do you do blind tags on the back, even though it happens all the time?
Yeah.
Like, what? But as for the Lucha Brothers, I don't care about them because I'm so over them. So here's the thing. He says, taking a sip of his coffee in an opportune moment.
About the
lovely tea. So here's the thing about a couple of things in AEW that we're starting to see. We are starting to see the limitations of their tag division insofar as we're seeing the same tag teams wrestle the same tag teams over and over again, which is a disadvantage when you're fielding 2 to 3 tag team matches every week. But yet the hybrid two haven't been on TV in a month.
Something like that, yeah.
That might be for other reasons, because I know that they live opposite sides of the world or whatever, but we've not seen best friends wrestle in a while. Right.
Well, we've seen them.
We've seen them in a 6-man tag.
And like singles matches.
Yeah.
And when we say TV, we're talking Dynamite. We're not talking Dynamite. Dark. Yeah.
Dark is YouTube.
Yeah.
Right.
And I said that to clarify, to let everyone know that we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. It's just when a team like Kenny Omega and Hangman Page, who aren't actually a tag team, are getting more regular tag team matches than like the Hybrid 2 or Best Friends.
Jurassic Express.
Well, Jurassic Express have had their own storyline going on right now, so they're still being featured on TV. True. It's worrying. Actually, worrying is not the right word. It shows that AEW's tag division is shallow. And yes, I'm well aware that WWE's tag team division is just as shallow, but they don't put on as many tag matches every week. Like AEW are regularly doing 2 to 3 tag matches per 2-hour show. Right?
Yeah.
Like this week on Dark, we had a 4-way tag team match on Dark. So take that for what you will. We're starting to see this with the women's division as well. It's changed a bit with the introduction of Chris Statlander, who we'll get to in a minute. But we started. JR asked one of the stupidest questions, because Chris Statlander's whole thing is she's apparently strong. And she said, is AEW Women's Champion Riho ready for the strength of Chris Statlander? I'm like, she beat Nyla Rose, for fuck's sake.
We know, we were there.
Yes, she's ready. She'll roll her up a couple of times, do a couple of knee stomps, and then just win for being shit. But like the general state of AEW isn't great at the moment, mainly because the storytelling is all over the place. As I've mentioned, the Being the Elite, the Nightmare Family, the AEW, Sammy's vlogs going on Sammy's channel, which in all fairness, he's been doing for a decade or so, and they're not being featured in
anything
storyline. They may be in kayfabe, but they're not like, hey, this is pivotal storyline, right?
Right.
And then we have other storytelling issues. The Butcher and the Blade. So we haven't recorded an episode really since Butcher and the Blade debuted. They'd kind of shown up, but we were like, wait, what?
Yeah, I think we talked about it briefly when they debuted, but we haven't actually talked it.
So to give you an idea, Butcher and the Blade have now been in AEW matches on Dynamite 3 weeks in a row. They showed up, they beat up Cody, and then they've had two tag matches. Right, first of all, let's talk about them showing up. So they show up, and nobody's got a fucking clue who they are. No one in the crowd. No one in the ring. JR doesn't know who they are. JR's like, who the fuck is that? Basically. And Excalibur goes, it's the Blade. To which Jim Ross asks, who? And Excalibur goes, the Blade. And that's it. And then the big monocle wearing motherfucker shows up and it's like, it's the Butcher. Who? Says JR once again. The Butcher, replies Excalibur. To wit, JR once again says, what? And then Ali pops out of the ring. And JR goes, who's that? Because she looks nothing like she used to, right? At which point Excalibur goes, that's Ali, the bunny.
Which right there, everyone knows that Allie's nickname already was the bunny.
This isn't the point.
Yeah.
Right. The point here is either your commentators know who the fuck these people are, or they don't. And it's perfectly okay for one of them to know and not the other one to know. But if the one who does know just repeats their name, we know nothing. If it's, hey, this is the Butcher and the Blade, previous XFW tag team champions in Florida, blah, 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 and start giving us some facts about these people so that JR is playing the layman and therefore having to get educated and educating the audience at the same time, that's fine. That's fine. However, that's not what this was, right? It's the Blade and the Butcher and the Bunny. Now, don't get me wrong, Ali looks great in that outfit. It's about the only thing she's done. And not once did JR go, so why is Ali turned into a bondage goth bunny? Now, we all know it's because Awesome Kong apparently kicked her in the head so hard and took a lock of her hair and whatever, she decided to go all dark side on us. But that's never been explained.
Nope.
Not once. And then they target Cody Rhodes. Admittedly, they tried to retcon this a bit the next week by having MJF saying, I paid Ali to go get the Butcher and the Blade to target you, Cody. But Cody is in the middle of a feud with MJF, and these other two people just attack him. Just boop. Sorry, buddy. Get fucked. Right? And not once is anyone like, not once has anyone gone to Ali and been like, yo, what up? Why? And then, the very next week on Dynamite, Cody is in a tag match against the Butcher and the Blade with some dude called QT, whoever that is. In a match that got QT over more than the Butcher and the Blade. And then the week after that, Cody's in another tag match against the Butcher and the Blade, having already beaten them once, I'd like to point out, with Darby Allin as his tag team partner. Where the Butcher and the Blade lose, again. You've given this huge build-up of coming through the ring, attacking Cody Rhodes, and then they lose 2 weeks in a row.
Do what it feels like. That whole build leading up to Sean Spears versus Cody.
Yeah.
Great build. Disappointing match.
And what? And it may just be me, but why isn't Cody teaming up with Dustin?
Which actually he is teaming up with Dustin for the Memphis show, I believe.
Which is being called the anniversary show?
Yeah, but they're not.
How? Their first show was in November.
No, because anniversary to when they announced the promotion.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the anniversary to when they announced the promotion. But that match is against Lucha Bros.
Yeah.
Not against Butcher and Blade.
No,
it's just Lucha Bros.
Because I guess Butcher and the Blade are... I don't know. Yes. Anyway. So then... That leaves you going, well, why have they given this huge build to the Butcher and the Blade? Basically, for the last 4 weeks, the MJF storyline hasn't existed outside of MJF cutting a promo or two, right? So, why? Why not have the Butcher and the Blade show up and attack best friends or Lucha Bros or SCU or anyone actually within their own division?
Yeah. And not only that, but you also interject at the same time about the whole Darby Allin thing where he's like, oh, I want my rematch of Cody because we never got a decisive winner in that
match. So I'm going to be his partner.
It's like, if I'm your partner and we win, I get my rematch. And it's like, that, like, as good as the tag team match was of Darby and Cody versus the Butcher and the Blade, the whole thing with Darby and Cody could have waited a while longer. Because that wasn't a top priority thing.
Or... You could add the Butcher and the Blade go after Private Party because they're so over. You still would have got the same amount of heat and recognition for Butcher and Blade, right? And just have the Darby and Cody program start 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. And that would have worked a lot better. And then that's when you could have also interjected MJF a little bit more into that feud near the end of it or something.
Yeah.
So it's like the booking is rough. It's really, really.
And that's
rough.
Another thing I wanted to bring up, because I wanted to talk about the VPs, which is Cody, the Bucks, and Omega. And it feels weird saying this, given what's happened in some other promotions, but I feel that. The VPs need to start being a bit more selfish, right? Like, no offense, but they are the biggest stars in the company outside Jericho, right?
Yeah, because I know, like, the Young Bucks have made it known that they've always wanted to lose more than win because they want to get talent over.
Right, I get that.
Which is great.
But you shouldn't be getting jobbed out by the Dark Order. And like 90 different, like how many more times? So when was the first Dynamite?
October 2nd.
October 2nd. It is, last Dynamite was the 18th of December. So there's been, what, 8, 9, 10, 11 Dynamites?
About 11, yeah.
Okay. How many more times do we have to see the entire Elite get beat down by a group of people?
Not much anymore, because we got the point in the first month.
But it happened the most recent Dynamite. It happened. Like, and yeah, I understand that they want to put people over, and the easiest way to do that is for people to beat known names, right? Or to surprise beat known names. But eventually, I want to see Kenny Omega and stuff like that pushing. Because, like, Kenny's, and yes, I'm aware that they're doing a long-term storyline with Kenny and building him up to eventually challenge Jericho and go back to the Alpha Omega thing, you know. But that doesn't mean he's got to lose all the time.
No. And he shouldn't have to lose all the time either.
Yeah. I think I've kind of belabored the AEW point at this point, in the fact that there's just a huge fucking problem with just the way they're booking everything. The one thing I will say is it has come out in the last 24 hours that as of the beginning of next year, AEW Power Rankings will be released at 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings. So they will directly affect that night's Dynamite.
Okay. Which would explain why we didn't see it this past Friday.
Yep.
And we won't see it this Friday,
probably. Also, they were talking about the fact that, well, there's no live show this week.
Yeah.
So they're also talking, originally they were talking about the standings resetting in January. So let's see if that all plays together. So
yeah. Which also, when they do have them reset, tell us how wins and losses matter.
Yeah, because
we're going into your 1 year anniversary when you announced your promotion, and so we still don't fucking know.
The Young Bucks just had a title shot against SCU, right?
Yeah.
After 1 week being third, and SCU being and Proud and Powerful being number one, the Young Bucks beat Proud and Powerful and go from third to number one, and Proud and Powerful go from number one to number four. Also, why are they beating Proud and Powerful? The whole point of that storyline is that Proud and Powerful have their number.
Yep.
Let's move on to the other things.
All right.
That I can rant about as well.
So TLC quick run through leading into Otis and Mandy?
Yeah, yeah, probably. Okay.
All right, so we had our last WWE pay-per-view of the year being TLC, and I'm just going to do a quick run through.
There are a few things I want to talk about here. Yeah,
I'll do the quick run through them. Let me know which ones you want to talk about.
Will do.
On the kickoff show, you had Humberto Carrillo defeat Andrade in a singles match.
This was a really good match. Really good match.
And then on the first match of the main card, you had the New Day defeating the Revival in a ladder match.
Yep. Another great match, which should not be a surprise from
those two teams.
Well, the first three matches were all great, right?
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the other one, which it should come as no surprise from those eight individuals, right? Just
high caliber.
Yeah.
And then in the next match, which was a singles match, which also a lot of people referred to as the match of the night.
Match of the night by far.
Aleister Black defeating Buddy Murphy.
I say by far, but The only reason that New Day and Revival were behind it is there was no build to that one being a ladder match. It was like, oh, right, TLC, therefore ladders.
Yeah, right. Like,
it just, that felt a bit forced. But Buddy Murphy and Aleister Black, with the exception of Aleister Black's trunks that looked like he shat himself.
Yeah. And then the next matchup, you had the Raw Tag Team Championship match, the Viking Raiders taking on the OC, which ended in a double count.
I like to call the product integration match, aka this is basically just a glorified promo for KFC.
Yeah,
because before this match, they had 8 contest winners. You can hear the air quotes sitting ringside on tables covered in KFC.
Yep.
Now, don't get me wrong. If I went to an event, and they were like, would you like to sit ringside and all the KFC you can eat? I'd be like, sign me the fuck up. But I would be far too busy shoveling chicken in my mouth to fucking cheer and shit. Whereas the 8 people they had ringside didn't even touch the chicken. They were just sat there cheering. Right?
Yeah. And they're also, a funny fact, they're also all the jobbers that they used on SmackDown two nights before.
Yeah.
But also, this match was also super predictable that we're going to have the OC because it was the open challenge match. Yeah.
I was kind of hoping they were going to do some, like have an NXT team show up or something.
Yeah. Then in the next match, you had the first TLC match.
I will say this. It is not. This is spun out into a bit more of a program with the OC and the Viking Raiders, which is good because your Raw Tag Team Champions should not be having squash matches every week, which is what the Viking Raiders were doing.
Yeah,
they were just beating up jobbers, carpenters.
Yeah. And then the next match would be a TLC match. King Corbin, with the assistance of Dolph Ziggler and the Revival, would defeat Roman Reigns, which was a little surprising on that one because with kind of the build leading up to that one, you would have thought that Roman would have got that.
Nah, that feud is not done.
Yeah.
That feud, that's the sort of feud that they've put so much effort into, they're going to pay that off at a big 4 show.
Yeah.
Not at like a B pay-per-view like TLC.
Right.
Think about what I just said. If when you saw the Dudleys, the Hardys, and Edge and Christian do TLC for the first time, and then a couple of years later you found out we're going to have a whole pay-per-view of that shit, and then now I'm sitting there going, that's a B show. That should tell you how much effort WWE puts into this shit.
Yeah. Next up, you had the singles match between Bray Wyatt and The Miz.
Right. Fuck this match. This match and the Daniel Bryan match and the fucking... I understand that people love Bray Wyatt. I understand that people love The Fiend. I personally love the Firefly Funhouse Bray Wyatt. Can't stand The Fiend. I love the Firefly Funhouse, Mr. Rogers, weird, creepy TV host Bray Wyatt.
It's awesome.
It doesn't, because he does good character work, doesn't make his matches good. Follow up. The lead up to this match, do you know what, were you paying attention for the lead up to this match?
For a little bit. I wasn't able to watch SmackDown a lot.
So basically, Firefly Funhouse Bray Wyatt appeared on the Tronja and Miz TV and basically threatened the Miz's family. Right?
Yeah.
And then the SmackDown before TLC, I think it's Renee Young.
You're talking about the sit-down interview.
Is at Miz's house.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Maurice starts screaming. They're looking on an iPad at their kid. and all of the Firefly Funhouse puppets are in the kid's crib. So they go tearing ass upstairs, or at least Maurice tries because she's wearing like 6-inch heels, to find a creepy, fucked up doll face doll in Monroe's crib. There's two things about this. One, this was supposed to have Monroe being scared of the doll. All she wanted to do was play with the doll. Like, they take it away from her and she starts screaming and reaching for it. Second thing is, this leads the Miz to saying, this is the most personal match I've ever had. This man came after my family. This man came after my home, my children. He invaded my house. I'm basically going to kill this motherfucker, which is what he said about Shane McMahon. Now, you watched this match.
Yes.
Tell me about Bray Wyatt's entrance.
He came out to the Firefly Funhouse theme.
Yeah.
Dressed up as Funhouse Wyatt.
Yep.
Which was very interesting and very different.
Yeah.
And then Miz would just beat the shit out of him, but yet somehow.
No. Bray Wyatt came down the ramp, stopped every 3 seconds, said, I love you guys, stuff like that. He walked around the ring. He climbed up on the announce table and posed with the title. He climbed up on the ringside and did the whole, am I getting in the ring? Am I not? And holding up the title like 6 or 7 times. And what did Miz do?
Nothing.
He stood there.
Yeah.
In the most personal match of his life. In the man who has invaded his home and trespassed upon his child's sanctity of his children's safety. And the Miz stood there and let him do his entrance. What the fuck?
Yeah.
And then the match is 5 minutes of basically the Miz doing Miz things. Have you ever just watched the Miz do things? He's just... Anyway. And then it's a Sister Gale on the outside. Sister Abigail on the outside. Sister Abigail on the inside of the ring. Pin. Right?
And then, of course, you had the post-match, which was he was contemplating doing the mallet. Because the Fiend appeared on Titantron.
And this is another thing I don't understand. They fucked it up when Seth Rollins went to the Funhouse. Right? They fucked that up. Like, yeah. Real hard. The whole, yes, okay, I'll do it thing that he said while he was looking at the Fiend would have been way more effective if the Fiend hadn't been there. And he was just, or if he'd had the hurt and heel gloves on, or someone like that, right? And then he goes and gets this massive mallet from under the ring that he's previously used to kill Ramblin' Rabbit and that the Fiend used on Daniel Bryan. At which point, Michael Cole on commentary says, what is that? Referencing the mallet.
Which you've seen a couple times.
You've seen it like 2 or 3 times, Mike. You fucking prick. Instead of saying, what is that? Say, oh my God, that's the hammer he tried to kill Daniel Bryan with. It might add some more gravitas to the situation. And then to make matters worse, the fiend effects start, and Bray Wyatt's all like, "We're here. He's here. Oh my God, he's here." And then a dude in a red scarlet hoodie and jeans and work boots jumps the rail. And it's so obviously Daniel Bryan.
Because he was wearing his typical maroon.
He was wearing his maroon and his American Dragon kind of look, right?
Yeah.
And Michael Cole's like, could it be? Yes, it fucking could.
Can't you tell by the moves?
Now, bear in mind, The Miz has been hit twice. Twice. And he's just out fucking cold. Daniel Bryan proceeds to beat the ever-living shit out of Bray Wyatt for like 10 minutes. Spoiler alert, it wasn't actually 10 minutes. That's a bit of hyperbole, but you get my point. Making The Miz look even stupider, because in the most personal match of his life, it took two moves to beat him. This match was awful.
Yeah.
It was just bad.
But then, of course, obviously, Daniel Bryan will remove his hood to find out that he's now NXT Daniel Bryan again.
Yeah, he's gone back to the short hair and the short beard.
Yeah, which is how he came into WWE.
Yeah, so. that's his American Dragon look, like.
Yeah. Which is cool.
They fumbled a lot of shit with Bray Wyatt, and they're barely keeping that character above water, in my opinion. The fiend and everything. I know that people still think he's the best thing going on in WWE today.
All right, so next match, you had the tables match between Bobby Lashley and Rusev, which Bobby Lashley would win. Yep, my thoughts exactly. That was my piss break. And then in the main event, you had the second TLC match for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championship, mm-hmm. the Kabuki Warriors defeating Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair, which in this match would have a legitimate injury scare.
Kyrie would get a bit of a concussion. Or was a suspected concussion.
Yeah.
It's not been confirmed whether she actually got a concussion.
Yeah, but she hasn't been cleared to wrestle yet. That's the one thing. But there's a lot of controversy with that, because apparently, as we found out in the days to come, Vince, Triple H, and Stephanie were all not there. Paul Heyman was in charge of all the Raw matches, and Bruce mm-hmm. Prichard was in charge of all the SmackDown matches.
Yep.
How nobody in the back recognized that Kairi Sane was out on her feet?
Well, they kind of did. So there's been...
Well, Becky...
This is what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Is Becky kind of noticed what was going on and rolled Kyrie under the ring.
Yeah.
And basically turned to Asuka and was like, we need to go home and you need to do the ending on your own.
Yeah. But the main point is how did nobody in the back recognize that?
Well, they did. I think they did. That's the point. But because Kyrie was already tucked away... They didn't want to like send the medical professionals down if they're going into the finish already, right? And you can tell that by the fact that the show basically ended with a big brawl to cover for the fact that they were getting Kyrie out.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, now, that being said, and I'm going to take into account that Kyrie was concussed at a certain point. This wasn't a very good match. Some of the stuff they tried didn't work right, or just certain things didn't fire right, or that kind of thing, right?
Right.
And I'm seeing a lot of people defending the match on social media. So here's what I'm gonna say. While I understand that it is a very cool thing to have women's matches headline pay-per-views, to main event pay-per-views, that happening should not, and the people involved in the match and all that kind of thing should not make the match immune from criticism if the match deserves criticism. I don't want to get to a point where just because a match has women in it or people of color or minorities of any type, that we can't just point at it and say, this didn't work. Not because they're women, not because of anything else. Just, it wasn't a very great match. Everything should be able to be judged equally. That's the point of equality, right? And it just, I think that it needs to be said that some of the stuff that they tried didn't fire right in this match, and that the match suffered for it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
I'm not criticizing it because of who was in it. It could have been four dudes that had that match, and if the stuff hadn't fired right, it still would have been a poor match.
Right.
But yeah.
So moving on, that was TLC.
Yeah.
Next thing I know that you really wanted to talk about was about the storyline with Otis and Mandy Rose.
Right. Now, it is kind of common knowledge that WWE Christmas shows are somewhat non-canon sometimes. However, on the most recent SmackDown, did you manage to watch it?
No, I have.
Okay.
Caps replying.
Yeah, you've had like 3 days since then, bro.
I forgot to DVR it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then just say that. They did this storyline 2 weeks ago where the Revival. And was it the Revival? I can't remember. But Heavy Machinery made a ham and it got stomped all over. Then this week on SmackDown, someone was interviewing them because they were going to a Miracle on 34th Street fight against the Revival. And they were getting interviewed in gorilla position. And Otis is like, all I wanted to do was make, I like giving back, so I try to make a ham for everybody. And everyone knows how much I love ham. And trying to be funny, but much like most of Otis's humor, it was just didn't work. I don't get Otis. I don't find him funny. I don't find him entertaining. I don't find him a good wrestler. I know I may be the only person on the planet because everyone loves Otis, but I don't get it.
I like Tucker better than Otis.
I do too.
Yeah,
like, I do too.
Tucker's the horse of that tag team.
But that,
but that's besides the point for right now.
So while they're in the middle of this interview, Mandy Rose walks up and says, hey, Otis, I pulled you in the SmackDown Secret Santa. This is the only time that he has been mentioned in the entire show. This would have been a great thing if it had been running all through the show, right? And like Roman Reigns is like, Put Randy Orton in the fucking Secret Santa. What the fuck do I get Randy Orton? You know what I mean? Like, even though I think Randy Orton's on Raw. But yeah. The point being,
yeah.
So she walks up and she goes, I pulled you in the SmackDown Secret Santa. And she gives him a ham and kisses him on the cheek. Right? Mandy Rose, noted heel and shamer of ugly people, gives Otis a ham and a kiss on the cheek. And then, after the match, Sonya and Mandy are stood talking. The ham got stood on in the match because for some reason Otis took a ham to ringside. And he walks up. Sonya Deville takes her leave and he says to Mandy, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have taken the ham with me. And she gives him a big hug. And because he's been in the ring, he's all sweaty. She pulls back. There's all these gross sweat marks on her. And she gives like here and walks off. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about this is from day one on the roster, on the main roster, since he got called up from NXT, Otis has been a sex pest. He's been sexually harassing. He's been creepy towards women. He's been... like, it's creepy the way that Otis acts around beautiful women, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like, oh, pretty lady. And he starts like thrusting at them and shit.
Yeah, he's essentially like a horn dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this most recent week on SmackDown, they gave him what he wanted. Reinforcing to people, it's okay to act that way.
Do you think that they could be trying to build to something bigger?
Like what?
I have no idea. Something that would actually end up ridiculing him in the end?
No, but what?
I don't know.
The storyline they need to be doing is Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. And how they've got this kind of weird sexual tension. That's the storyline they should be doing. Man. Not Otis being a sex pest and getting rewarded for it. That's fucked up. And it's not the sort of thing you want to teach kids.
Yeah.
Rant done.
Yeah. As you drink your tea.
It's coffee.
Oh, it's coffee. So, rant done. Moving on.
Just fuck that whole storyline.
Yeah.
And again, I understand occasionally, A, it's Christmas. B, those episodes are sometimes not exactly canon, such as the time that Alberto Del Rio super kicked Santa Claus. But you get my point, right? Right. Like, it's just... yeah. It turned my stomach a little bit.
All right. So,
sorry. I've been in enough situations where I got to be honest. I've been in a lot of situations where there have been less socially aware members of society. Right. Who do things like stare at a woman's boobs or say inappropriate things or things like that. And yes, I'm aware they don't know any better, right? But then they get educated or they get told, no, that's not okay, right? And I'm sure a fair few of those watch the WWE. And now they're going to see Otis get rewarded for the way he was acting, and that's not okay to me. I'm sorry. It made me kind of sick. And yeah, I get it. It was a nice Christmas feel good moment for a lot of people because a lot of people love Otis. But for me, it was just like, ooh, Someone put that dude on a list.
So, Ben, with this being the end of 2019,
yeah,
we got three little things on our little list of looking back on, and then we got like two little things to look forward to in 2020, or look, yep, or what we like to look into for 2020 would be better to say. So, starting with looking back at 2019, in your opinion, what was the best storyline in all of professional wrestling? It does not have to be WWE.
You should go first while I'm thinking about this.
While you're thinking about it, mine obviously is, it is in WWE. It's actually the whole Kofi Kingston road to the WWE title. I think they actually built that up pretty well, with the exception of a few little flubs on like how he got to get his title match, but the fact that they made a big deal about it.
Oh. Hush.
And he, and he,
that
got,
is your weekly reminder that it is in fact Rusev Day. So happy Rusev Day.
but the fact that he ended up getting the title and that he actually got to have a really good reign with it, like a nice lengthy reign with the title.
Yeah.
To me, that was possibly one of the best storylines of 2019 for me, was Kofi Kingston, the WWE title.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been a few. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say the best storyline of 2019 for me happened in progress.
Okay.
And it was the rise of David Starr through the independent movement, and then winning Super Strong Style 16, and then going on to challenge Volta for the title and getting double crossed by Eddie Dennis. So I think that storyline's been pretty good for me.
All right.
That might have been my favorite of the year.
So David Starr progress.
Yeah, either that or while I don't like the way it is continuing, I think that one of the best storylines of the year might be the MJF Cody storyline, just because of it involves MJF.
Yeah,
and it's basically made him a household heel at this point. So.
Yeah, and in all honesty, I would definitely put Sean Spears versus Cody.
I would
as a storyline, but then it got tainted horribly with the way that match ended.
If it had carried on for a while, then maybe.
Yeah,
but
and that's the only reason why I bring it up. It's like it had that potential. Like they were doing a good job, and then they get to the match, and then it's just gone.
It's just, beep.
Yeah. Yeah. Most absurd moment of 2019.
I'm gonna have to think about this one while I take my pills. Carry on.
Yeah. Definitely most absurd moment. God, is honestly, you know, I don't think it's a moment. I think it's honestly a series of moments, but it has to be like the booking and the outright love that AEW has been getting this year, because they're the new kid on the block. You know, they're trying to be that alternative to what we've always wanted. When an article recently came out and says, yo, NXT is exactly what AEW is trying to be, but AEW is failing to be. And I think, now that we're getting near the end of the year and people are starting to see more and more, like we have been seeing since day one, you know, I think that's starting to calm down. So like, that's also one of my things to look into 2020 to see how AEW is perceived, because it's been a little absurd with how much love that the company's been getting, despite the many, many flaws that it's had that we have talked about ad nauseum on this show.
Yeah. Most absurd moment for me, depends on your definition of absurd. Are you looking for funny or are you looking for stupid?
It could be either.
It's got to be the moment of Drake Maverick getting pinned while he's trying to consummate his relationship with Renee Michelle, with Renee. So,
I think the whole 24/7 title's been absurd.
Yeah, it's just kind of dead now. They had so much momentum, but they refused to take it off R-Truth for more than like 2 weeks. So,
yeah. Last one for look back at 2019. What title in any promotion do you think was the most prestigious title of the year?
That's a tough one because prestigious means different things to different people.
Right. So like, and I'm going to say right now, I'm ruling out all of the AEW titles because a lot of them were not introduced until late this year.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, they haven't had the time to really build up much of anything, despite the fact that Jericho has done a pretty good job with the AEW title.
Has he though?
For the most part.
He's defended it like twice and both of the times he's won with his shitty back elbow.
Yeah. But to me, I'd have to say for me, oh man, it's really tough. Because I don't know too many of the promotions out there, but I know like what Matt Taven was champion for majority of the year for Ring of Honor.
Yep.
And he carried that title very well.
Yep.
Kofi Kingston carried the WWE title very well this year. Universal title was very meh this year.
Yeah.
For the most part, because Lesnar held on to it for most of the year. But yeah, for me, it's really between Matt Taven and with the Ring of Honor title and Kofi with the WWE title. I think what they did for the respective titles throughout the year helped really bring up the prestige of those titles. Now, what happened afterwards, that's a different story. Can't really speak on that.
I think I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find anyone that doesn't say the IWGP title in New Japan. Or the, personally, the light heavyweight title in New Japan. But if we're looking at, like, US and non-Japanese, I don't think any of the titles have been particularly prestigious. I mean, Kofi, sure. But just again, it depends on what you mean by prestigious.
Right.
That's the problem with a word like prestigious.
Well, we could say it in a way of like, whose title reign do you think was the best title reign of the year or something like that?
Oh, then definitely Kofi's.
Yeah.
Mainly because it happened.
Good reason.
It existed. I don't like the way it ended at all. Like, not even...
Like, we got the reason why they did it the way they did, but we don't like the fact that they did it the way they did.
Yeah. I wouldn't have been mad if Lesnar beat him after a competitive match. But, nope. 8 seconds. Or whatever it was.
Yeah. Look into 2020. What do you think, in your mind, could be the most shocking moment to take place in professional wrestling?
shocking moment.
Yeah. I think for me, it'll be, it's a tough one. Because I only get to see more AEW WWE than I get to see of anything else. So I really can't talk on other promotions as well, like you can. But I could see Jericho losing at Wrestle Kingdom.
And then Tanahashi challenging for the AEW title.
Yeah.
And yeah, what I was going to say.
And winning it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Because I think that would really send shockwaves throughout wrestling. Because it's like, I think
it would send shockwaves.
Well, I mean, well, think of it from this perspective. You know, there's been like the thing that you had alluded to early in the episode about being the Elite, where they can't show Kenny's shorts because it says New Japan on it. You know, and there's been always the talk that we've always seen about, like, there's bad blood between New Japan and AEW and all this other stuff.
No, I dig that. But the problem is, I don't think it would send ripple. Like, the moment that... how do I explain this? The moment that he challenges for the title, it's no longer a shock if he wins it, because it shows that the two are working together. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
But I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah, I don't know. I would find it shocking to me if that actually did take place. But
I'm not saying it wouldn't be shocking. I'm just saying it wouldn't be this huge holy shit moment, because we'd have the holy shit moment when he challenged for the title, not when he won it.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying there?
Like, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing we could also say is a shocking moment would be AEW gets their shit together and actually just gives us good booking on shit.
No, because they did give us good booking on some things.
Yeah, but long-term stuff where it doesn't leave us leaving flat.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing that worries me about the MJF-Cody feud.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Like after Spears-Cody, I'm leery.
Yeah.
But last thing is, along with the NWO and Batista, who do you see going into the 2020 WWE Hall of Fame?
Well, there's a windmill slam I say every year. William Regal.
Yep. I got on my list, I have William Regal. I have Christian. And I have on women, I have Victoria.
Yeah.
I don't know about tag team yet. I'm still kind of on the fence about that one a little bit. I would love to see British Bulldog go in.
Nah, I'll tell you what they're going to do. If they put Christian in, they're going to put Edge and Christian in as the tag team. Because they're always into these two. They've got to have so many. It used to be a rare thing that you'd have two-time Hall of Famers. But now we've got like 7 2-time Hall of Famers, and there's some people that haven't even been in once.
Yeah.
So it would be hilarious if they had Christian on the stage twice in one night.
They have.
I just think that would be amazing.
You know, thinking about that? No. You have Edge and Christian on stage twice themselves, because who would induct Christian? Edge. Yeah. And then who would induct Edge and Christian? Probably like the Hardys or something. Angle. Oh, yeah. Kurt Angle. Yeah, definitely. Mick Foley could induct him.
Yeah, there's plenty of people that could induct.
Like I thought about for tag teams the Hardys, but
the Dudley Boys.
Dudley Boys went in already.
No, but they could induct them.
Oh, they can induct them. Well, I was thinking about going in. I was thinking the Hardys, but I was like, it's probably still a little too early for them.
They also probably don't want to put Jeff in the Hall of Fame the year he got arrested for DUI like 3 times.
Yeah. So thankfully, due to the reports, he's actually taking his getting cleaned up seriously.
Yeah,
so.
We've had that report before.
Yeah. And I keep, even though I'm a fan of his, I still feel a lot of disappointment. So. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's tough. But your go-to obviously would be William Regal. Who yep. else could you potentially see?
William Regal.
So William Regal, Trent yeah. Seven.
William Regal. William Regal and William Regal.
What about Mustache Mountain?
William Regal.
Okay. Gotcha. So
I am so emphatic that that man belongs in the Hall of Fame.
You're not getting a single argument from me on that one.
Good. Now, there is one thing. We've done a lot of looking back and looking forward for the last year and for next year.
Yep.
But this is also the end of a decade.
Yeah.
So what to you was the moment of the decade? Mine's easy.
God, there's just so many moments. You know, I mean, you have stuff like where the Nexus came in and made their debut. You had the CM Punk pipe bomb. You had the formation of AEW. Like, there's a lot. But, I mean, I think for me, one of the ones that always pops up in my mind all the time is obviously the CM Punk pipe bomb. Because in a way, that kind of opened the doors to guys like Daniel Bryan, you know, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, now Jon Moxley. Like, he was the guy who kind of, like, kicked that door open to give us more of these guys who wouldn't normally wouldn't even get a look in WWE. And then I think also what Triple H has done with NXT.
Okay.
It's been one of the biggest things of the decade, too.
Yeah.
To take that from a contest show to a legitimate brand. So.
Yeah. Mine's much, much more simple. And yes, I could talk about the pipe bomb.
Yep.
But that was obvious. People are going to pick that one. I think the most underrated moment of the year and what it meant for wrestling in general is AJ Styles debuting in WWE.
Yeah.
Because I would argue that AJ Styles has been the most consistent wrestler in the world, the best wrestler in the world for the last decade. That would be my... And he's... And someone who... someone who I never expected to see in WWE, let alone showing up, winning the WWE title and holding it for damn near a year.
Yeah. And then not only that, but like...
Most absurd moment of fucking 2000... Was that 2019?
Yeah.
Was it 2019? I don't think it was 2019. Never mind. I was going to say Jinder Mahal winning the fucking world title.
Well, that could be your absurd moment of the decade. So, but yeah, so it's been an interesting thing. It'll be fun. Yeah. Next time we convene will be 2020.
Yep.
And, Ben, where can the people find you on the social medias?
Find me on the social medias at Bob T. Goldfish on Twitters. You can find the channel at 321 Podcast on Twitter or on Facebook at 3 Topics 2 Guys 1 Podcast. That's the number 3, the number 2, and the number 1.
All right, and then you can also follow me on Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions. I'm trying to get more active on Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75. I've been working on a massive project that Ben has seen me work on my end over here. So that'd be cool. And of course, as always, txhthockey.com/awesomemania, where you can find our archive or Hall of Fame, which we will be doing more inductees in the coming months. because it's going to be that time. And yep. With that, Ben, take us away.
It is with that that I leave you with the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. Be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender specific honorifics.
And with that, until 2020, we will see you ringside.
Peace!